Oh yeah, we got volume going. We got that volume going.
That's good.
Volume and it's going.
I got the volume and the volume is going down in the bayou.
Down in the bayou. Go.
Down in the bayou, these volumes are rocking.
Can't have ourselves with them gators. Without a good volume going.
With the volume with them gators. Or do they got crocodiles? I don't remember what they got in the bayou.
You know when them crawfish have finished cooking when their volume is there.
I want that to be the start of the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Heretic Hammer Podcast. I'm your host, Marshall, and this is my co-host, Dylan.
Hello, hello.
And we are here today. I already kind of spoiled the topic to the episode, but any episode's topic is a spoiler when you click on a YouTube thumbnail, because it's in the title and thumbnail. The only person it could ever be a spoiler to is Dylan. Do you remember what the topic is for today?
I'm going to be honest. Not fully. My mind was fully concentrated on Fulgrim over the past week.
Okay, well, it's not
Fulgrim
yet.
It was all Fulgrim all the time.
Yeah, it's not. We're going to wait until we kind of get like that rough release window.
Sure, sure.
So some time there still, but today is some Space Marines, but far less heretical, and in fact, quite not heretical. And that would be that of the Death Watch.
Death Watch, yes.
The Death Watch. Who watches the Watchmen?
Death.
You know, the Death Watch don't in fact watch them. They probably shoot them for being filthy mutants. And very well, as the Watchmen, our characters would be probably some dirty, filthy Xeno sympathizers. Them, those goody two shoes in the Watchmen. You thought.
Let's ask Alan Moore on this. Let's get Alan Moore on the horn.
You thought, see
what he has to say.
You thought Steve Jobs was bad. Wait until the Death Watch get in. What Dr. Manhattan did to Rorschach will pair in comparison to what the Death Watch will do to Rorschach. is the Death Watch. They are specifically a special order of Space Marines. Specifically, they are a group of veteran Space Marines that are chosen essentially to like amongst a chapter's best and brightest. And you know, this is veterans of any and all chapters, although I think technically there's a specific list, but nothing fully stops you from it. If anything, the only thing that prevents you as a chapter from having someone joining the Death Watch is that your chapter is just too young.
Okay.
Which currently there are a good number of. Many of the Primaris born Space Marines in terms of 40K are very young chapters. So they therefore will not really have anybody out there. But that being said, these are specifically also veterans who have been considered to be not only the best at fighting, but the most knowledgeable of fighting Xenos. As their giant fortresses orbit desolate worlds at the edge of the galaxy, keeping a constant vigil over possible Xenos forces. They also have secret bases that are spread throughout the Imperium to provide, you know, more convenient launch sites for their crusades. They also include the recovery of and study of alien devices and artifacts. Sometimes it is necessary to use a weapon against the enemy who created it, although this is not taken lightly. The Death Watch are also constantly vigilant for sabotage or to advise if it is truly safe to use a weapon of Xenos origin. They're most notable for their black armor, though it is not all black. They have a silver left pauldron and gauntlet, which will always maintain. They will always maintain in that symbol and that like emblem when they leave. As far as I know, I don't know if they always keep the pauldron, but it's generally they will always keep at least the gauntlet as silver when they return to their chapter.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Because I was thinking about this when I was playing Space Marine 2 as well. Yes. So the Death Watch, are they pretty much exclusively focused on Xenos? Like they're not concerned with like any other factions or anything?
Yes, they are realistically exclusively focused on Xenos, as pictured here with the Wojak Gene Stealer cult man.
Yes, correct.
I saw this and I was like,
you could take the bolt gun out of his hand, and it could just be his finger pointing, and I feel like it would be like.
Well, look at the bottom left. You see the Gene Stealer that is up just Wojak? Yeah.
Yeah.
He is straight up pointing at the Death Watch over there being like, oh my God. but yes, they are exclusively focused on Xenos. They're specifically under the command of the Inquisition's Ordo Xenos as well. But this is also then therefore why they will take veterans who have such knowledge and are so specifically kind of have found themselves so fine-tuned to take care of Xenos. And thus it is looked at as a great honor generally to join the Death Watch. And you will see that referenced in Space Marine 2, where when he initially tells them, you know, that he was in the Death Watch, you know, kind of before he says that he was a Black Shield, which we'll talk about, you know, they were like, you know, they saw that and they're like, oh shit, he was in the Death Watch. Like, this guy's like, he's worth our respect, you know, like he's like, it's a great honor. Like, you know, like, so it is looked at very positively to go to the Death Watch, despite that you are, you know, some certain chapters maybe have some issues or misgivings or questions going into it, right? Maybe some don't find themselves worthy. In the great short series, Angels of Death, which is unfortunately on Warhammer Plus, but, you know, we all have our ways. when the character that goes to the Death Watch, like when we see it in a flashback before he goes to the Death Watch, he talks to his chaplain about kind of how he feels like he has concerns because he's starting to feel the signs of the Black Rage. You know, he's felt the Red Thirst. He started to feel it kind of himself kind of beginning to morph, you know, to morb.
Yes.
And he's concerned that it's going to kick, you know, it's going to come and it's going to kick in while he's in the Death Watch. And the Black Rage is such a well-kept secret that they're kind of, you know, always meant to not let people see it, but you're in the Death Watch. You're not, you know, you're not safe with your brothers, you know, like, or like, you know, your closest brothers, right? You're just out there with your cousins, you know, and they don't know your issues. So that's the, it's a real issue for them, but they obviously still will do it and find the honor in it, right? So that's like the catch with it.
Okay.
But the finding of the Death Watch began in the 32nd millennium. The seeds of the Death Watch were first shown during the War of the Beast, which is a whole episode. Like, if we want to talk about the War of the Beast, just it's worth itself, a whole wow. episode. Oh my God. It's so pivotal to early 40K stuff. But for some background to it, it was a time when a mighty war boss known as the Beast nearly destroyed the Imperium, took his, you know, his whole gang of orcs and wad all the way onto Terra. And this is only made in, you gotta look, and you look at the year, like, this is pretty shortly after the Horus Heresy, all things considered, right?
Okay.
you know, this is a time when they're constantly trying to rebuild themselves. Most of the Primarchs have kind of disappeared at this point. And, you know, the Imperium's trying to figure itself out. You know, the Inquisition is kind of just around-ish, but like very lightly. And then, you know, it's still primarily just being handled by the currently remaining Space Marine forces and the High Council of Terra. The War of the Beasts made its way all the way to Terra. And this, and like the Beast was, the people, there are many who believe that the Beast, you know, might actually be a Quark that somehow survived himself all the way. But part of it is also that there has been many showings that just if an orc grows big enough, that it will get smart enough, right? Which is partly maybe why the Quarks got dumbed down so much to the orcs, is that they maybe repopulated and then never lived or fought long enough to truly become Quark-sized again. But so this, the Beast was very intelligent. He could speak flawless Gothic. It wasn't like, you know, the classic, you know, oh, you will need to be crumping then. He would like, it was like facing a, like a, essentially speaking to him was like facing another human adversary. So he was not to be trifled with. And like I said, he took the fight to Terra directly.
And he used that eloquence to negotiate a peaceful ceasefire, right, between the orcs and the Imperium, right? That's what happened, right?
Absolutely not. So This war started partly because when Horus had taken over a planet called Ulanor from the orcs during the Crusade, you know, this was a large scale assault that inevitably is partly the reason that Horus became the War Master at that point in time. And it was also here then that the Beast showed up. He kind of vowed revenge for the previous war boss in a way and just blitzkrieged his way all the way down through Terra from Ulanor. And actually then those first Death Watch recruits were in fact survivors, were from that initial, like the assault of the Beast, not obviously the Great Crusade one. And this was this initiative was held up by Lord Commander of the Imperium and Chapter Master of the Imperial Fists, Corland, because he realized that small kill teams of Astartes were going to be required to eliminate the Beast and his strategic assets. He actually tried to make it onto the ship, and this ended up being pretty dang successful. You know, they were able to help, you know, push forward into getting rid of more and more orc leaders, and eventually obviously push back, get the Beast killed, and the Imperium survives. So inevitably then the reason that this gets to the Inquisition is because the High Lords of Terra get kind of iffy that it's like, are you setting up a lot of Space Marines there and some weird configurations, what you got going on there, buddy? You know, and so he's like, okay, we'll do appease you and your suspicions. I'll hand them over to the Ordo Xenos, and they can essentially command and deal with them. So these are Space Marines under human, under normal, non-transhuman control, you know? Okay. That appease you, and it did. So we have the Death Watchers. They are now. And they are obviously by working in such small groups and groups of often varied, you know, kind of levels and types of warriors. You can see even in this image here, you've got one with a heavy gunner, two different Terminators, you know, one who's rocking that sword and pistol combo, and then two more standard Marines in the back. And you can find different variations as they go through as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the The first style of their tactics is called the Aquila tactics. These are their general versatile tactics. These are then used when the exact nature of an enemy force is unknown, either because they just haven't been able to get enough info on their opponent, or because this is a new Xenos that we just haven't even seen in general at this point, right? You know, yeah. So like maybe if they're trying to find a gene stealer cult, they'll go in with this kind of standard kind of rank and file, slow movement, you know, engage when necessary kind of generalist kind of tactic, because they're like, all right, we got to figure out who's potentially Xenosified and whatnot, you know. Yeah, or they just like don't understand what this weird little gremlin in the sewers is. I have no idea what the hell that thing is.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Dominatus tactics are designed to directly combat the most elite warriors of a Xenos army, aiming to deny them a crucial resource. So these will be, you know, those who are of great strength and skill, and they'll obviously then push in and specifically seek and destroy these important targets. You know, obviously it's just to create pinpoint tactics, right? Somewhat, this is obviously a somewhat obvious thing to do if you are in a war with someone, right? Go find their best forces and find a way to take them out, because then the rest of the cannon fodder will be nothing, right?
Yeah, certainly.
Next is Führer tactics. F-U-R-O-R, not the other way.
Okay, I was gonna ask.
And this involves just the...
We're trying to be on the nose, not up it.
Right, and this is just to bring the firepower, explosive firepower, and this is kind of horde tactics, right? This is to concentrate on these like tightly packed hordes, just build up against the horde to slow it down by almost making them have to like climb over the bodies of their own dead. And this was in fact developed by what was called Squad Viridium during the War of the Beast to combat hordes of orcs.
Interesting.
But then have obviously now been used vastly against the Tyranids. This likely then would have been the tactics thought process used by Titus's Death Watch crew at the beginning of Space Marine 2 had they not all gotten Kerr blasted out of the sky. And obviously then any form of tactics went out the window at that point. And then we have Malleus tactics. These were first used by Captain Brontos on Rakor 9 against the Tyranids. And now this is an impulsor, but honestly the concept works between both Land Raiders and impulsors. But especially because Land Raiders are probably on their way out in terms of the game and lore. Anyway, they're used to claim larger enemies before then using power weapons to engage them in close combat. So kind of like use these vehicles, just blast your way in, kind of almost bulldozing and rampaging your way in, and then just coming out of the tanks, which is power weapons, just beat them down. And then next up, we've got the Purgatus tactics. These were developed by a librarian, Del Athew. Librarians always have the like most like the most Latin of names.
Yeah.
And this notes that it is the application of utmost force on the leadership figures in alien hordes. Obviously, it's like, or it's, which is just like so like, okay, yeah, like it's just like everything is using the utmost force. Like, what do you mean? So I somewhat take it that obviously by this being created by a librarian, that there is some respect in this being more focused on like pure like stealth and assassination, right? You obviously maybe will like blast Blitzkrieg your way into, you know, like a castle chamber or something, wherever their leader might be. You know, or if it's like looking for a hive tyrant, just like blitz, like, you know, or just like crash bombing your way into it or something like that. But I imagine this is meant to be like a bit of like a stealth and like specifically like gun locate, like patiently locate and then go hard ham in on leader. instead of it just being like key strategists like it was with Dominatus, this is specifically find the number one person, which is useful for a war boss and like against an orc, because you, when you get rid of the war boss, pretty much the orcs just go away.
They scatter.
Yeah, they just go wherever, and they kind of stop fighting because they inevitably have to find a new war boss. And what will often happen then is they'll fight with each other for a good long time, and then maybe, if anything, you can kind of just like weed them out or weed them through as they fight each other. So this was where that specifically would definitely come in. Otherwise, there's Venator Tactics, which was obvious, as it should have been, created by Akon of the White Scar. So not Jagatai Khan. Yeah, well, because the chapter masters of pretty much of the White Scars are like, will always be labeled as a Khan. So like Jagatai
Khan.
But like right now, for set, for example, currently the White Scars are led by Corsero Khan. And so this was created by Jagen Khan, and this was then created to deal with the witch cults. So how do you deal with fast moving Drukhari witch cults? Bikes. So other bikes and other fast moving units engage with long running battles, you know, just firing down, and then obviously utilizing heavier than units to hold at a particular location, right? Kind of like doing that thing to like encircle your foe and like guide, almost like herd them like sheep into a spot where you have a bunch of like big stationary cannons just waiting for them, you know?
Yeah.
And then you just kind of call the herd, if you will. Otherwise, the Death Watch have a bit of kind of a the way they're kind of broken down. So their main elements and gear and whatnot. At the beginning, the Death Watch had a single chapter master known as the Watchmaster, who was a former, Space Wolf. I don't know why Space Wolf was really hard for me to think of. they were a Space Wolf, and kind of, because when you're a Watchmaster, you kind of stay on the Death Watch pretty much. They have now spread kind of vastly through different watch fortresses or stations. And so now you kind of will have multiple watchmasters and the like, you know, somewhat like one step down. Like each station will have its own commander. And then like, especially because of Imperial Nihilus, that's why there's not really one watchmaster for the whole of Death Watch anymore. Because like you kind of need one on each side because they really can't talk.
yeah
However, they're obviously, then they're well noted by their spectral pauldron and gauntlet. As you can see, it's not just silver, although the gauntlet usually is just silver, but the pauldron is also emblazoned with the Litany Xenomortis, and I cannot find anywhere what it is, like what it says, what
like the exact wording.
Yeah, like I have no idea, and I can't find anywhere that anyone knows what it says. But that's what it's called. It's called the Litany Xenomortis. I couldn't even get like a potentially bad answer from Reddit. You know, that's when you know it's bad.
Yeah, that's dire.
Yeah, I cannot find that, but that is there. And like I mentioned earlier, when you leave the Death Watch, many could keep both the pauldron and the gauntlet on them as they return to service. So they will put the rest of their colors back on to their armor, but they will keep that as their signifier that they were on the Death Watch. So for Titus, for example, he was somewhat, and it was partly because of the game, obviously, but like he was somewhat a rarity where his only thing was his, you know, his chain. But usually they will keep the gauntlet or the pauldron. Otherwise, when they are in the Death Watch, you will also see that they always have their right pauldron is still that of their chapter. They're always, while they will be mostly blacked out, you know, on their armor, they will never, you know, they're not going to sully their past by, you know, covering up their whole lineage, unless they're Black Shield, but we'll talk about that. But otherwise, Death Watch members have access to kind of a range of specialist equipment. Obviously, within the Imperium, that means that they pretty much kind of get about the whole kit and caboodle of what you could want when it comes to the gear that they have. And thus also being these kill teams, as we kind of noted earlier, they have the benefit of being able to then have a very diverse grouping. You know, you don't have to be worried about being like, you are an assault marine squad, so you guys only have bolt guns and maybe are led by one leader, you know, by a lieutenant with a bolt pistol and, you know, chain sword or something. And that's the only kind of weapon diversity you get, kind of thing. You know, or you're an Infernus group, so that you only get flamers. That's not the case of the Death Watch. The Death Watch, whatever the engagement requires, it's honestly what is set up in the Space Marine 2 game in terms of like the, you know, the mode. Mm-hmm. The co-op multiplayer mode that I've forgotten the name of for whatever reason. That is more akin to like how a Death Watch kill team would work than like an actual Space Marine team would work. Granted, any of that can be taken with a grain of salt because obviously the needs of the current strategic conflict and whatnot are always permitting to whatever you need to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is. But generally, that is the thing, is that that's the benefit of the Death Watch, is you get a very diverse weapon group, which also might include some Xenos weaponry sometimes, as can be seen here by this lieutenant carrying a Necron sword.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a questionable thing sometimes.
like stroking under the chin, like, wait a second.
Yes. As we kind of mentioned earlier, right, they are meant oftentimes to collect and determine whether or not they are safe to study Xenos weaponry and gear. Well, and in part of that, one of the benefits they often will get is by essentially allowing themselves to use the weapons of the enemy against their own. Sometimes that is, in fact, the most efficient way of dealing with them. Because it turns out when Necrons spent millennia upon millennia of their own time, millions of years ago, constantly in civil war with each other, and now are potentially going back into civil war with each other again, now that during their reawakenings, they're really good at developing weapons that kill each other.
Yeah, okay.
So it turns out then using a Necron sword is really good at killing Necrons.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yes. Though sometimes obviously that does mean that you need to be careful and watch your brothers, because who knows maybe what they might be looking at or how deep they might be going. So just because you are allowed to make use of weaponry, that does not mean that you were completely without fault on maybe getting a little too into it, right? you still have to keep yourself out, like especially a mind and whatnot out for yourself, right? Because as we will know with one of the first species and conflicts that we'll talk about, this, you know, touching the orb could be a problem. But if it has been determined that it is pretty safe for use, then you will definitely find members of the Death Watch using such blades. And in some scenarios, may actually being able to bring it back to the chapters with them. Very rarely and very uncommonly, but it is technically possible. I would not look at it, though, as a thing to expect if you were joining the Death Watch.
Not a guarantee.
No, very much not. However, the Death Watch also have the exclusive access to the Corvus Black Star, the airborne ships that you see up here. And this is generally the reason that they will get this is small enough to slip through many sensor grids, but its weapon systems are still very highly advanced. So it allows them to kind of move in almost like a stealth bomber, if you will, right? Except in this way, they get to be a transport, so you get to come drop them in and out of battle as well, which is obviously a very good benefit, but thus the Inquisition kind of holds this kind of thing for the Death Watch on very high like regard. These are piloted exclusively by tech marines, you know, who have mm-hmm. almost like become one with the machine spirit. When it's in combat, it can switch from being like a, you know, fast moving fighter to a hovercraft. So like it can then deploy them. It is a very advanced ship, and it is possibly could be one of the cooler things about playing the Death Watch on tabletop if playing flying models wasn't such a bad time.
Yeah.
Because GW makes the rules for them almost impossible to play with. However, for some fun, notable events of the Death Watch, in M41, they are met by a species called the Hrud, which I learned apparently they seemingly have a somewhat multitude of types of Hrud. There are some that believe that some of the Hrud could be a gateway for the Skaven. But that's kind of a, I don't know about that kind of thing. However, generally the Hrud look like this. They're not pretty creatures.
That's not great.
Yeah. So originally, regiments of the Mordian Iron Guard, along with the Sons of Medusa, were dispatched. However, both were overcome by Hrud's entropic field. So these are Xenos that are actually able to manipulate the time of biological and technological things. So like if they attack you, as they hit you, you age.
Interesting.
Wow. Yeah, they're very strange. And this, they had been dispatched to the shrine world of Damal because they were attracted to crystallized veins of crystallized time, because they were held in the planet's stasis crypts, which is such an interesting slew of words there.
Yeah, totally.
So then two Death Watch companies from Keep Extremis attacked the Hrud and were led into battle by 8 Death Watch dreadnoughts. And it was the ancients of these Death Watch dreadnoughts, which, yes, there are dreadnoughts that will go into the Death Watch. It's not always exactly clear on like exactly how and when they get there. As far as I know, though, it's pretty much that you became a dreadnought inside of the Death Watch, right? Like, I'm sure there's a scenario that an Inquisitor would be like, hey, I need that Death Watch, or I need that dreadnought, you know? But like, I think that would be very rare and very unlikely, because obviously the dreadnoughts are looked at as, you know, these advising ancients, right? So
yeah.
It was these dreadnoughts that led the final strike upon the Hrud's world of Warren, and in fighting them endured the accelerating aging effects of their fields long enough to kill their leaders and collapse the tunnels. However, all 8 dreadnoughts were killed in the process and were recovered rusted, with their biological remains inside having been reduced to nothing but dust.
Great.
Yeah, but you know what? They beat him. That's what matters. It was a sacrifice exactly. Worth having.
Hey, win's a win. You take the win, you go home.
And what I do love about, because obviously when you get into 40K, some of your thought might be in that realm of like, oh, like we just, you know, erased all these beings, you know, like, oh, what, like we've committed like mass alien genocide, you know, and there's many things to say about it. And then you look at the Hrud and you realize that's right. Not all aliens are sexy elves. And some of them do, in fact, just exist to kill you. And it's actually, in fact, that Xenos are actually to blame for the fall of the Emperor's children in not a small manner of speaking.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes it was a thing, you know. But that being said, another fun, or I shouldn't say fun, but another interesting engagement, which we'll kind of have a related matter to soon, was on the planet of Astragala. A host of Yanari would later come to Astragala's aid, because this is later when essentially the Imperium and the Yanari have a truce. However, they then came under attack by Death Watch Company from Fort Pikeman, who had also came to aid them because they heard the distress signal. And because they are unaware of the alliance between the Imperium and the Yanari, and obviously then would refuse to listen to them saying, hey, yo, we got a truce. What? Whoa, same sides, same sides. Mm-hmm. They're like, and this is because it was in the Dark Imperium. So it's kind of a whole thing, obviously. Yeah. It's not super their fault, but kind of also is, right? And so neither, because they just like pushed on them, because they're like, oh, it must be these Xenos that are hurting our people, neither of them were strong enough to defeat the chaos forces that were actually attacking Astragala, and the planet fell to them. Whoops.
Great.
Somebody probably told that watch company, and that they were like, they're like, you idiots, what did you do? And then that watch commander was just like,
nothing.
Edo. Hands on the head. that one's going to get something if people catch that one. So this comes obviously into a lot of criticism the Death Watch get, and that they're so blindingly hateful and anti-Xeno that they sometimes become too focused and, you know, will essentially fall into strategic pitfalls because they're just like, oh, I gotta fight it's these stinking Xenos, elves, you know, kill them. And it's like, no, we have a truce. Like, hell you do. Yeah, it's just, it's a criticism that they get, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, we can talk about now the Black Shield. So the Black Shield, yeah, there are a number who do not keep the symbol of their former chapter, as I kind of alluded to earlier, where they, you know, leave that pauldron black, or the skull-faced icon of the Death Watch will be on their left shoulder as well. And then they'll just have like the silver accent on the side of it. So this will still essentially denote their allegiance to the Chamber Militant. However, the main reason that this practice exists is it actually mainly started because Space Marines that lost their chapter, whether it be that they have severed themselves from a Brotherhood of Astartes that maybe fell that betrayed the Imperium, you know, or like fell to chaos or something, or they just don't exist anymore. They're literally one of the last standing members of the chapter. And sure, they're like, hey, I got no chapter anymore. They all died. Can I join the Death Watch? And they'll do so sometimes as a Black Shield. And thus, as Titus alluded to, they kind of are then continuing almost as a somewhat like nameless and recordless Space Marine of the Death Watch. However, that being said, there are also those who maybe are sent in under unscrupulous circumstances, such as former Captain Titus himself. He was then obviously put in there as the belief that he was going to be, that he had turned his grace away from the Emperor. So it was then turned there to be, you know, like a way of redeeming himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that is obviously kind of a factor with that, you know, but being a Black Shield does not necessarily mean that you were banned, but it definitely means something went down. And for whatever reason, you no longer wish to be associated with your chapter, or they don't wish you to be associated with their chapter. One or the other. But thus, for characters of the Death Watch, we've got our main man, Titus, as we got to play a little bit. Yeah. obviously, there's not much to say with him. We obviously know the reason that he joined the Death Watch was because of that bitch ass Leandro.
All my homies, every single one of them, even the ones who have never listened to a single episode of this podcast, who have never played a single anything related to Warhammer 40K in their entire lives. Every single one of my homies wakes up every day and goes, fuck Leandros.
And that's what I really love. So recently, Wes Hammer did a hated characters like list, like a top five characters of hated characters of 40K. Shout out to Wes Hammer, by the way. He's a good lore creator. And his number one, spoilers for that video, his number one was Leandros, and which was above Erebus, because there's that realm of Erebus is a good villain, so therefore you hate him, but you can admire the fact that you hate him because he's actually a villain. Like, he's just, you know, he's the bad guy.
Yeah,
it's not like the villain where it's just like, oh, he is so, but like, this is such a redeemable thing. It's just like, no, he's just a piece of shit, but you can respect that he's a piece of shit because that makes him a villain, you know.
Yeah,
but Leandros is just an asshole. And thus we have Titus now being a black shield amongst the Death Watch. And then this is not a picture of him, of our next character, but it's just a visual representation of
an artist's rendition.
Yeah, of Asker Warfist. This is just a Space Wolf Death Watch. So I felt like, because he was kind of in Terminator order, I felt like that might be fitting for maybe what Asker Warfist was wearing. But he was the first watch commander during, you know, at the formation of the Death Watch itself, and because he was already a wolf lord when the orc forces of the beast invaded the Imperium in Ulanor. And so he took part in his chapter's battle against the orcs, and then unfortunately, obviously, many of them passed. But he then often looked over the multiple fights of Ulanor that would take place. But obviously, he's just notable because he was the first watch captain, you know, watch commander. I am also sorry. I will apologize now. If I have screwed up somebody being watch commander or captain in terms of like how I reference them, it's easy to forget. I'm sorry.
It happens.
Commander is first and then it's captain after that. But again, it's, yeah. Otherwise, one of the most notable Death Watch leaders and characters is that of Artemis. He is a Space Marine originally of the Mortifactor Space Marine chapter. He is currently serving with the Death Watch as Watch Captain of, you'll recognize this name, Talassa Prime.
Oh.
Do you wonder why Titus maybe named a segment of his squads as Squad Talassa?
There you go.
Yeah. So he has a couple of notes of notable things here. So his Death Watch destroyed a Xenos called the Knib, a 10-limbed old ones race. So they were relatively, they had some psychic capacity to them. However, when trying to deal with them, they began to psychically dominate members of his Death Watch kill team and bend them to their will. And so some of those Space Marines then essentially betrayed the other members. And Artemis and his remaining sane group held out for a number of days. And when he finally was able to break out, eliminated the Knib by calling Exterminatus on the planet, as you do.
Like you do.
And now let's talk about something that he is potentially the most infamous for. And that is he famously foiled the ritual of Eldar Farseer Eldrad Ulthron in the Battle of Port Demasnus. During the battle, Artemis ignored the pleas of the Farseer to cooperate with him, as he had a ritual in tow to destroy Slaanesh. He was like, I've got it. I'm going to do this plan. It will kill Slaanesh. And he fights him anyway, Like, Artemis fights him anyway and states that he would rather see humanity fall to chaos than trust the word of a Xenos.
Great.
However, that ritual and thus this act of thwarting this ritual had, somewhat inadvertently, saved billions of human lives, as they would have been sacrificed for said ritual. So, in a way, he wasn't wrong. He was protecting citizens of the Imperium by stopping this ritual. And obviously, there's a number of questions about that whole, you know, about, you know, there's a whole philosophical debate on that aspect of maybe would that have been worth it? Would put, you know, would a couple billions of humans in the greater Imperium compared to the, you know, like potentially like Google Plexian number of humans in the galaxy itself, like in the entirety of the Imperium, like would it have really mattered? And then you actually get to lose a chaos god is just gone. Maybe. Again, that's a philosophical debate now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, these were humans under the protection of Artemis. So here you are. But this is what makes it a point of contention, right? People love this because it's a classic 40K move, right? It's what you kind of want your 40K to be, is them doing something that seems to defy all forms of logic, but it is because they are steadfast in their beliefs. Otherwise, people look at it as an example of why Space Marines are dumb and you shouldn't like them.
Yeah.
So again, that is a point of contention. I somewhat fit in the, it's a classic 40K move. And it also is, it is also a great reason why you could not like Space Marines, right? You could, I think, like I've mentioned in this podcast multiple times, one way or the other, everyone loves Space Marines. One way or the other, everyone looks at a Space Marine and is like, hell yeah. But you also can get real sick of their shit. Much like the Mechanicus in a way. As noted by Titus when he's like, when they're like, what's wrong, brother? Well, it's like, do you have a problem? He's like, well, I only have a problem with you if you worship the Omnissiah. Ah, I get it now.
Oh.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Now it makes sense. I feel you, man. Otherwise, finally, Death Watch and the Tabletop are in a bit of a state of flux right now. So they were originally kind of gutted for 10th edition. They had an index, and then it never really got any updates ever. And then they got thrown into the Imperial Agents Codex, and the index was removed. However, this has then since changed because people didn't like the codex and their role in said codex, because it got rid of a number of their data sheets. And thus, as a part of the Grotmas kind of Christmas calendar detachments thing, they regained their index. And I think, honestly, this has a lot to do with the increased popularity in the 3 Space Marine 2. But they are still available to play through Ordo Xenos and all that. And is, you know, how people feel about Imperial Agents as a codex, you know, but people aren't as big on it. But it is an option, and I'm sure there are some people who maybe are into it and will be happy that maybe that one day they will get a real army rule.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, obviously their main attraction is their special weaponry and like kill teams tactics, along with the Corvus Black Star, as again, unique data sheet thing. And you know, the weapons are somewhat tied, like special weapons are somewhat tied to the like older firstborn like kits. That being said though, you know, they still get like different weapons within one data sheet. So you can get like a very, which is a double-edged sword, right? Having in the game of 40K, having a spread out weapon type, so like having one person with a heavy, one person with a sniper, one person with a melee, that could become a problem because it's like, well, how do you position them, right? How do you tactically play them? So it's a bit, it can be a bit wonky sometimes, but that's kind of what makes like Death Watch somewhat lore fitting, because like people who play Death Watch or are at least like good with Death Watch on the tabletop are often those who then are also like have played Space Marines for a really long time and are really good at Space Marines.
Okay. So right? They're already familiar with how.
Yeah. Like they know kind of like they have an idea of like how all these weapons work and then maybe have a good idea of how to make these kill teams work. And granted, they have data sheets that are standard, just like standard Marines, where it's just like group of Marines with, you know, with bolt guns, right? Or a group of Marines with Phobos armor and pistol and close weapon combat, right? They have those data sheets. It's just you get on top of that, the special ones. Okay. It's like you get both. You are not totally without. But yeah, like, so that's kind of the part of the, but they don't get every Space Marine data sheet. But again, that's kind of also what makes them necessary for, or what makes them good for veteran players. Much like how the Death Watch are filled with veteran Marines. So, but yeah, any questions on the Death Watch themselves?
Not really. That was really thorough and they're really cool.
Yeah. I actually really do. It is funny. I don't know. Just like the concept of like what the Death Watch do and like them kind of getting their like special stuff and all that. Like it does actually really kind of make me like them a lot. You know, you just get like, it's like, oh, cool. I can have my, I think though what they work so well in is kill team, like thematically and then gameplay wise too.
Yeah.
Like they're like, cause they're like perfectly designed. I mean, they're literally called Death Watch kill teams, you know? Like,
yeah. It's just a really good fit.
Yeah. So, but I love the idea of like, and I would love to like know of, people should put in the comments like if they know of any good Death Watch books, because yeah, I really could imagine that like there are many really fun and good like interactions, because like you're effectively from like different countries like worth of like culture differences, you know, between these chapters. And so like, you know, the like they have to all come together and like gel. And like, I imagine there's some times where there is probably some contention, you know? So that'd be fun to read.
Yeah, definitely.
I do love on the oppressor, like Gravis armor, how like for their big gauntlet, yeah, because they still have to paint that gauntlet silver, how it just like bulges out.
It is cool though. It's a really unique. Like it's already like the Death Watch themselves are already really unique, but like the whole thing with the gauntlets is such a like standout part of that armor. Like it's as recognizable as like the black, you know, paint scheme is overall for like this is Death Watch.
I kind of like that they're like that they get like the capacity where it's like they just hyper focus on Xeno. So it's like you don't necessarily have to worry about like, or like they're not, you know, cause they're not facing chaos. You know, they're not like, if it's like, oh, we're getting help from the Death Watch. It's like, okay, cool. We're getting help from the Death Watch. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like Grey Knights where it's like, hey, what are these gray space Marines? I don't know. Uh-oh. They're pointing their guns at us now that we've won.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Oh no. But then, yeah, like obviously it leads to probably interesting engagements and all that. And the reason I brought up the HRUD, I wanted to bring that up, is because obviously is like in 40K, you know, like we, all of the stories and like, because, and a lot of our attention are going to go to Xenos that are like, you know, the Tyranids and, you know, like the Tau, but you know, there are still a great many Xenos remaining in this galaxy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Granted, because of the Great Crusade, there are massively less. But there are still a number of remnants and those around. And I mean, inherently, no matter what, really, realistically, one way or the other, the Necrons are never going to not be a threat. I don't really see them ever being willing or wanting to create some form of truce. The only one maybe would be Zarek, but I just don't really see him doing that. Like, and that's the thing, right? Like, I love currently that the like Eldar and the Imperium have like a form of truce. And the reason I like that is not because I want like all the happiness and all that, but because it shows it, because it can lead to the betrayal.
Yeah.
Who is going to turn on who? Because absolutely the Eldar will absolutely turn on the Imperium if it beseeches them. They're not. The Eldar are like, you know, they try to be like, you know, smart and like, you know, work and like ways to try to keep themselves safe, because they kind of just see themselves, you know, as a dying race. But like, hey, if they find something that can lead them to their own prosperity, like if finding that last Crone sword means that like they'll have to like kill and erase like the humans that are with them, or, you know, like if it's like a thing where it's like, you know, like if you take this blade, every human will be Thanos'd. Yeah. They'd pick that up in a fucking second. And maybe I could be proven wrong. Maybe Yvraine would be willing to, but I don't really think so. I think they would straight up just pick up that sword. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so one way or the other, you know, like the Death Watch has a function, and especially with the current onslaught of Tyranids, that has never been more true. But otherwise, yeah. Do you have any strong feelings on the Death Watch?
I mean, this is an interesting one, because it was one of the ones when we were kind of talking about, you know, what are the topics, like what are things that we haven't covered yet that we want to cover? And I brought up the Death Watch as one of the things that I was interested in. And I was already interested in them before we even started talking about them. But there was a lot of mystique for me, because I wasn't super familiar with them outside of Space Marine 2. And now that's been filled in a little bit more. And I think my takeaway, honestly, is like, no, they're still really cool. They're still really interesting. And it still kind of feels like there is this like mysteriousness to them. Like even with everything that we do know about the Death Watch, they're, I don't know how to describe it, but it's this feeling of, it's kind of similar to the Grey Knights, where it's this feeling of like, yes, they technically, you know, operate under the Imperium, and they operate under, you know, they're not total free agents, but there's this weird sense of like, at any time, if they really wanted to, they could become just like complete free agents. They've got this like ticking time bomb feel to them that's like really interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the funny thing, because it's like, you know, when their time comes, which is varied, you know, it could just be one mission, or it could be, you know, like in Titus's case, multiple hundred years.
Mm-hmm.
They could return. They could be returned to their chapter and service at any time. But one way or the other, these are veterans who have proven their loyalty and commitment, you know, to the Imperium and, you know, to fighting Xenos. Oh, mm-hmm. Shoot. That is one thing I forgot to mention, is, and I'll probably get kicked on for people who like are like, you didn't mention this.
There's still time.
So when they join, they get put into the Death Watch. They are like, you know, like every Space Marine, when they become a Space Marine, you know, they are almost like hypno-indoctrinized to the Imperium and the chapter and everything. But like they get, when you join the Death Watch, you like get it again, except essentially they plant in your brain the like tactics and information on like every Xenos species that the Imperium knows of. Like, it's just like, okay, you're getting into the Death Watch. Here's a 20 terabytes of information downloaded to your brain chip.
Interesting.
Which is a big thing, a big thing to note. Like, it's not just experience as to why Titus knows so much about the Tyranids in Space Marine 2, right? You know, like, I mean, he was a captain, right? So he like knows about Xenos aplenty, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, part of the reason that he like, for example, that he knows that there's only ever one lictor at a time, you know, the reason he knows, like, that's like a pretty obscure info thing about the Tyranids. Like, you have to have somehow like known of or done a bunch of research to figure that out in lore about the Tyranids. But like, Titus just knows it. And that's because he was in the Death Watch. That stuff doesn't leave you when you leave the Death Watch.
Yeah.
They don't like suck the information out of your brain. So yeah, like that's I forgot that. And that's, this is like a pretty important aspect to them, but yeah, other than that, I think that's it. That's it for this episode.
Cool.
And next week we're gonna get back into the hobby-ness a little bit again. Except we're gonna do a little bit of guidance on 3D printing.
Ooh.
I know. GW doesn't want you to know this.
No snitches. All right, nobody snitch.
Hey, look, every STL or tac like thing I'm gonna talk about specifically is going to be perfectly legal. That 80% rule really goes a long way. But yes, otherwise, thank you so much for watching and or listening. And we'll see you next week for more heretical Warhammer content as given to you by a Xenos and a human traitor.
The Odd Couple.
That's right. But goodbye, I'm secretly goodbye. A Harlequin, so you know.
Secretly? With that outfit? Hang on now.
Well, I'm dressed as a Farseer. Or no, I'm dressed as a Warlock. Sorry.
Yes.
Well, technically, I'm dressed as a Corsair. I intended it to be a Warlock. But then my mask doesn't cover my face, you know? It's just there. Otherwise, see you next week.
Goodbye, goodbye.